Welcome to another Carlin Loads Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin. Do you know what, Rob?
What?
It's nearly the end of 2020.
Oh, thank goodness.
Exactly.
Hopefully it'll be a better year next year.
It's got to be, surely.
I hope so. Fingers crossed.
I was just thinking, we haven't really spoken about the love of your life.
My wife?
Your second love of your life.
My children.
The third love of your life.
My grandchildren.
The fourth love of your life.
Okay, baseball.
It is. That's it. We got there. We haven't really talked about baseball much this
year. Oh, now that you brought that up, you're right.
You do slip it in every now and then.
Yeah.
But, I thought it might be time. I'm sure that you're holding back. There's something you want to tell me about baseball.
Well, you know, the last time I can recall actually talking about baseball is when you went to the baseball.
And that was like, was that earlier this year or was it late last year?
I think it was earlier this year.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, but you had a ball, didn't you?
I had a ball at the baseball.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a baseball historian and I'm doing a lot of...
I didn't know that, Rob. Well, are you a baseball historian?
Well, I'm always researching. I just love the history of baseball in South Australia. Anyway, I was checking some things out recently in the 1920s. I'm looking at doing this story about a team called Freemason Ramblers that played from about 1911 to 1923, and they won four flags and they're always up near the top. Anyway, I was looking at the news. Now, the news was the afternoon paper in Adelaide from 1923 when it started to the mid-90s. And I hadn't really checked baseball out in those early editions of the news, but I was checking a few things out and I come across a real gem. And I thought I'd, just have a little bit of a go through it. It'll only take 2 minutes to talk about it, but... In the early 20th century, in baseball reports, the rider was never identified except for monikers such as home run, slider, pitcher, catcher, or even just ball player. And then from a baseball report in the news on September 20, 1923, the following extract by ball player makes interesting reading under the title Ninth Innings Tragedy. With two men out and one run to win, a tense silence fell over the highly strung multitude which had gathered to witness the strenuous struggle for supremacy. In this solemn stillness, I left the bench with measured tread, feeling as though success or defeat depended upon my efforts. I formed a stern resolution that I would extend my fullest energy in the interests of my team. Midway between the bench and the box, I heard the umpire call, "Batter up!" And my captain, running to my side, whispered hasty words of encouragement. Taking up my stand in the batter's box, I gripped the bat firmly and faced the pitcher with determination. The grim-faced pitcher stepped into the box with a fiery glint in his eye. With a wind-up that was more pronounced than usual, the pitcher delivered the deadly ball with tremendous speed. I made a feeble attempt to strike at the ball, and simultaneously with the sound of the ball striking the catcher's mitt, I heard the umpire call, "Strike one!" On seeing the looks of dismay on my comrades' faces, I faced the pitcher more determined than ever. Again, the mechanical wind-up. Again, the same deadly ball. And the call was, "Strike two!" On the third, I shifted my feet, took a firmer stand, bat poised to make a mighty swing. I swung hard and fast. The crack sounded like music to my ears as the ball sped to the outfield. High over the outfielder's head, it travelled, and the excited crowd yelled, "It's a homer!" I rounded first base like a flash and made for second amid the deafening roars from the crowd. The coaches were yelling themselves hoarse. Touching second in my stride, I headed for third, running strongly. Amid the din of roars from the excited crowd, I blindly rushed for home. "Slide! Slide!" I heard the crowd yell, and down I went. Alas, it was all a dream. I had fallen out of bed. Well, I thought that was a good effort by a South Australian writer because, you got Casey at Bat, which was written late 1800s, and Take Me Out to the Ball Game, I think was written about 1908, the famous baseball song, and, of course, Abbott and Costello's Who's on First. But I like this, bottom of the ninth. I reckon I struck gold. What did you think of it?
That's real gold, Rob.
I knew you'd appreciate it, mate.
It's a great story, and then you get sucked in right at the end.
Well, I think I told you I went to a sports history meeting, and it was a show and tell, and everyone was showing something or talking about something, and I actually read that out, and I had everyone eating out of my hand, and then at the end everyone laughed. So I really appreciate, you know, the laughter, because it's a bit of work sort of standing up there, you know, talking about it.
Well, it's a nice way to finish, isn't it, with a bit of a joke at the end.
No.
But let's be clear, baseball is no joke.
No, it's serious business, serious business. Now, I suppose you've got something to match that, Sean. I mean, I put the challenge out to you. What have you come up with?
You did put the challenge to find an article to read, and mine is not a joke.
No?
Even though the event I'm talking about, I have had a lot of stick about.
Oh, hammer throwing.
No, hammer throwing is a very, very more serious than baseball. But in fact, this is about the Tunarama.
Oh, Port Lincoln.
Port Lincoln. And so I get a lot of rubbish about being the world champion tuna tosser.
Do you still?
I still hold that world record.
Well done.
And of course, coming up in January will be the Tunarama. So late January, there will be again an attempt by people to try and break that record. So I thought, you're a historian, I'm not, but I found an article about the history of the tuna toss at the Tunarama. Would you like to hear about it?
I would love.
Would you like to add to your history knowledge?
I would love to hear about it, Sean.
Well, in 1979, a couple of locals from the Tunarama committee decided the festival needed something unique that identified with Port Lincoln's already famous tuna fishing industry. In a way that can be enjoyed as a spectacle by anyone, entered by anyone fit enough to consider doing so, and was a bit of fun. There were many ideas put forth at the time, but none that seemed to gel with the festival's goal of celebrating the industry that gave it its name. Until it was noticed by a couple of fellows that the primary method of unloading the overflowing boats that came into the port was a very manual, arduous task. Men would stand on the decks of the boats and throw tuna up onto the waiting trucks. Well, those fish that were small enough to throw, that was. Many local lads would line up in those uncertain economic times looking for a few hours paid work. They had to pass a simple test, throwing a fish as far as they could, or at least as far as was needed on the day, depending on the tide and the truck. The best throwers would get work for the day. It was a prideful thing, a boast for the boys afterwards, as they spent part of their earnings at the nearest hotel to quench their hard-earned thirst. Men being men, this had become a local bragging right to see how many days' work they gained or how far their fish flew. For the festival committee, this was a natural event to consider, as the festivals also run at the time of year when most fish were being landed and they were in plentiful supply. So it was decided to hit on a formula and method that would allow many people to enter and enjoy this local sport. A backyard test was conducted with a few fish of varying sizes, and different methods were tested. Bearing in mind that many people might never handle such a fish at other times, so it had to be user-friendly. In the first year it ran, it provided to be an outstanding success, with hundreds of festival goers lining the local jetty and shoreline to watch some of the bigger fishermen and fish workers as they lined up to throw a regular size, approximately 20-pound fish by means of a rope handle. A bit of prior publicity has suggested that the event may well become an entry in the Guinness Book of World Records, prompting a thinner but more lithe man to enter, just to see if skill could win the day over brawn. Some very large and well-muscled men worked in the industry and had reputations for being able to handle fish with great panache. They stood on the line in the sand, facing along the beach near the town jetty, under the watchful gaze of hundreds as they whirled the fish above their heads or heaved them with a great underarm lunge, glinting with perspiration, matched by the brilliant blue and silver of the flashing fish. Just before launching as hard as they possibly could in an arc that would see the fish land some distance away, a long line of men stood on that line that day before a school teacher stepped up to the mark. John Penny was well known around town as a man of education with a well-spoken demeanour, but little was known about his sporting ability, other than a spot of casual cricket and the like. Well, turns out John used to train for the Olympics in his younger day in a minor discipline, that of hammer throw. He has seen the others throw in the various fashions, some ungainly, some mighty, just a bit of warm-up, and he grabbed the fish and threw it way past where it landed previously. Some were shocked and cried fouled, but the judges saw nothing wrong with his skill, and the throw ended up winning the event. Incredulous, many men vowed to learn about how to throw it that far and return next year, so it became an annual attempt, now including both genders. Renowned around the world, another Aussie hammer thrower came in 1998 to throw what still stands as a record. Sean Carlin tossed a tuna 37 metres and 23 centimetres. In 2002, another hammer thrower, Brooke Kruger, threw the female record of 21.25. So these fish can really fly. Even though none of the fish have been thrown in competition, have been intended for consumption by any person or animal and have been classified as dead upon retrieval and too small for the market, a decision was made a few years ago to replace the fish used in trials with rubberized versions. This was done for a number of reasons, mainly economic and convenience due to the reduced bycatch brought about by keener fishing methods. The finals do, however, still use the real fish when we have some. As this remains the preferred method of all regular competitors and more accurately reflects the balance of the actual animal for historic recording purposes. The donated fish that were used are not prime examples by any means, they never were. As unusable by catch, we merely hold them over for a while until returning them to where they could have gone anyway. The competition is a prime example of how a city interacts with its unique identity and the industry which drives it forward. The people that began this tradition still live on with every toss, and even though the industry changes with technology and demand, this event honours all those people that contributed to the beginning of what is now arguably the best-kept fishery in the Southern Hemisphere. For a little taste of what it used to mean to work on this demanding industry, you're invited to join us on the foreshore of Port Lincoln every Australia Day weekend.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, how many times did you actually do the event, Sean?
Once.
Just once. No, I just wondered. I saw one of the instructions there that someone would draw a line in the sand, and I'm just wondering, are you the guy now that draws a line in the sand to make sure no one wins it?
Well, no, I haven't been back since. I have thought about it many times, and maybe one day I'll go up for another look and have a holiday up there and enjoy the Tunarama Festival, because it was a great weekend, but say well over 20 years ago now. So, but yeah, it was a fun day, fun weekend, and I know every time people go up there, I know Brooke Kruger, as it said, broke the record, and Darren Billett, they're now married, Darren and Brooke. And Darren and Brooke used to go up on a regular basis as hammer throwers and make a bit of money on the side.
I'm wondering how weightlifters would go, kind of like a Dean Lucan guy who come from Port Lincoln.
Yeah, well, Dean Lucan, obviously, he was a tuna fisherman. I'm sure he must have gone in it, but I don't know his – I'd have to look that up. I'd have to do a bit more research and
I
see.
Think
but
he won.
There's got to be no doubt, because he was a very, very powerful man.
Yeah, and now, out of interest, what was the record before you smashed it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm just – is anyone getting close to 37.23?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe a few years ago a Japanese hammer thrower came out with a film crew, and the attempt – they really wanted to break that record. And unfortunately or fortunately, he failed. Because it is nice. I've got really not much left. And
my hair.
I have none of that left. But my nephew also, Jet, in the hammer, is coming through and breaking all my junior records. So it might be that might be the only thing I have to sort of brag about for the rest of my life.
Well, that's something really good to brag about, I suppose. It's a real iconic event in South Australia now.
It is, and I didn't realise that the first winner also, you know, something similar was a teacher. And obviously did a bit of hammer throwing back in the day as well. So I thought that was a nice little point. I didn't know the when I read that article, I thought that was very interesting.
Well, I think it's fantastic that we've been able to bring our two loves into the show, you and your tuna tossing and the baseball. So ends another Carlin Loads Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.